You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Ellen Winkler. Ellen, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you. It's a delight.
Ellen, I know you're talking to me from, is it your studio just outside of D.C.?
I'm actually in my house. It's heated, but I don't have the heaters on, and I'm comfortably in my house. And it's not very cold out, so I'm here in the house.
Very good. So what are you working on these days? We're talking, of course, still in the peak of the pandemic, October 20th and 2020. So maybe just to frame how are you doing there? How is all of this at the moment anyway affected your practice? And then we'll talk about what you're doing.
Well, we've been incredibly fortunate. We're both very healthy. We're not young, but we're healthy in spite of that. And we're able pretty much to, I mean, we go out as much as we need to, but we're very safe. We follow all of the various recommendations of the governor and the CDC, and we live in a place where people are being pretty sensible about this. So while we take some risk going out, we're pretty safe. And we've been able, I think many people who don't have something to do like art are kind of at a loss to fill time, but we've been just filling up our days with all kinds of things, but making a lot of art, doing a lot of, we archived all of our art in the beginning. And so we're both staying, my husband also was an artist, and we're both staying very busy and quite happy in spite of the really dreadful things going on in the world. I don't mean to make light of them, but we're coming through this okay, knock wood.
Well, you know, it's a theme that kind of, oddly enough, runs through almost all the interviews I've done in the last several months. Artists, I can think of hardly any interviews in the last several months where artists haven't said, almost feeling a little bad about the fact that they're getting a lot of work done.
Right. In the beginning of the pandemic, when it really was a shutdown and no one quite knew what was going on and you really didn't go out of your house unless you absolutely had to, it felt suddenly as though each day was swept clean of all of the obligations we have that we take on willingly, but still it's an interruption. And suddenly we had time in the studio and more time in the studio. And as I say, we're both printmakers and we have 30 years of work behind us. So we took an opportunity to photograph and archive all of the work. And so now we've gotten busy again. I did Zoom meetings of one sort and another and so forth. The days do seem jumbled and very busy, but still there's a lot of time to focus on the work that's been so important to me through the years.
So let's talk about that. What have you been working on? What's the current, what are you making?
Well, since the pandemic, I think just prior, well, no, for the 4 years leading up to the pandemic, I've been doing a lot of work at a farm I live in a place, Montgomery County, and so in Upper Montgomery County, I came upon a farm, an old building on that farm, it's a log cabin, though it didn't look like it when I first saw it. It was incredibly dilapidated, and maybe the last storm took it down, I'm not sure, but the angles of it and the lines of it were just extraordinary, and I made the acquaintance with the farm owner, and I went out to her farm often for about 3 years. And she had other buildings, lovely lady, Dorothy Warfield is her name. And she let me come and have the use of her entire property pretty much. And I spent just a lot of time studying those buildings and studying the way the light affected them. And many of them were sheathed in corrugated metal, which I just find, I just have to draw corrugated metal when I run into it. So that had been where I'd been coming from. And so when the pandemic hit, I was able to continue the landscape theme, if you will. I would bicycle over into the town of Silver Spring and found some wonderful old alleyways there and made etchings of those old buildings. I'm sort of particularly taken with alleyways, and the grungier the better. I'm not very fond of contemporary office buildings, but old buildings fascinate me. So I was making a lot of those studies. And then as that became less and less easy to do, I turned to some sketches. I've been riding the subway to and from Washington for many years, and I'd made sketches of people over the years. So I turned to those sketches and began to execute a series of dry point prints of people that I drew on the subway. And then finally have just recently begun to do a series of landscapes again. And these are strange things. I was attempting to do in oil what I'd been doing with etching, and I ran into trouble. So I just let myself paint what I felt like. And suddenly I was painting what I know now are just very fairly abstract scenes of rural countryside. And this is appropriate to the places I was working in Montgomery County, but it also goes back to a time in my childhood when I would get in the car with my grandmother and go out into the country and see these amazing, nothing, I mean, not spectacular places, just rural Michigan countryside, but it always affected me very deeply. And I think all my life I have been wondering what the question is, how do you take this thing you've just seen, whether it's a person or a landscape, whatever, and somehow convey a wonderful old building, convey the sense that it's given you, convey the excitement, the visual impact. How do I get that into a painting or an etching? And that's what I've been working on, and pretty happily, I'll say.
So your painting and your printmaking, or you mentioned DryPoint, but you're doing both, or one is a preparatory for the other?
Mostly I do both. I tend lately to do, I've done landscapes in both etching, dry point, and painting. The people I tend to do, well, I've done paintings of people also. So I go back and forth. And I will say that there's a linear quality, of course, to printmaking and to etching and to dry point. The lines that are achievable in those two media are just, I love them. And I used to do primarily monotypes, but got instead into doing etchings. And I have always been amazed at what's possible in etching. And you know, a blank plate is just an invitation to make a lot of, and as it turns out, I make a lot of mistakes. And then in correcting them, I get the textures that I want, and I get the tones and so forth that I'm looking for. So primarily etchings right now, dry point of people, and the landscapes currently are all oil paintings. And they're small. They're quite small. I want to do an intimate work. I want someone to come up and stand about 12 inches from these things and really get right into the middle of them.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about like mistakes that, of course, happen in printmaking, and that seems so much a part of that process of printmaking. But you did monoprints first. Monoprints from DryPoint is a completely different process, isn't it? One is can be almost gestural or painterly, very loose, and the other is like a type of drawing, really quite different, aren't they? Or no?
No, absolutely, and I started out doing monotype. I'm not sure why. I had met, there's an artist here in town, a man, he's elderly now, but he's still a wonderful printmaker. His name is Jack Boole, and I discovered his prints, and he's fairly well known here. And he was deeply influenced me, and I began to do that. It's a very painterly form, and that suited me at the time. And it's, of course, it sounds as though you have some familiarity with this. I paint these things with printer's ink, which can be dissolved in turpentine, which makes it spread all over the place and sort of disintegrates the ink. Or I can use linseed oil, say, to help manipulate the ink. And that is also very difficult. But I got very fond of the painterly quality of the marks. And, of course, the challenge always was to do something that didn't look like just a blob and a big mistake. But I got quite adept at that. But at some point, I think I wanted the challenge of working on a plate where you make a mark that's very difficult. The marks are always removable, but it's very difficult. And I also, as I say, there's a quality to an etched line. It's like you can draw so freely, and yet it can have the width of a human hair, and yet be so, it just can go all over the place and be so descriptive. And so I think I haven't done a monotype, actually, in quite a long time, but I've become very fond of doing that. And you're right, printmaking is it's more of a drawing technique, I think. And I guess that's interesting, Brainerd. It brings me to a concern I have, which is I sort of ask myself sometimes, why am I doing what I do? Because I don't have a particular agenda, and I'm not working conceptually, but I simply find that I have to draw. I cannot not draw. And from time to time, I've gotten quite frustrated. And this isn't recent, but years ago, I'd get very frustrated and I'd say, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm done with it. And I could last usually a day and a half. And then I would have to go back and draw some more. So that's the thing about the etchings and the dry point is it is very much a drawing medium. And I just never tire of that.
It's so true. It is drawing, and so you know, since we're talking about printmaking, and yeah, I have done in the past monoprints. I'm somewhat familiar with printmaking, but not many other processes. And so, you know, what you're talking about, which seems, yeah, so close to drawing, and the plate is such a beautiful medium. Why the print as opposed to drawing? Because you could just be doing drawings then, whereas the print is so much more painstaking, and as you say, mistakes can be made and not easily changed or incorporated.
You know, that's a very interesting question, because a lot of my etchings and dry points start from a drawing. And I think at one time, of course, the great benefit of any printmaking was that you could make many multiples and sell them. I think they always sold fairly cheaply, but still there was the monetary aspect of it, and that has not been a concern for me. But I think what interests me is making the translation from, I like to work with sanguine chalk, and so making the translation from that on usually I choose a kind of a buff paper, making the translation from that to a hard, usually black line on a copper plate that then gets printed. I think what I like to do is to find various ways of introducing tonality into my prints. Of course, printmaking is not always in the way I do it. It's a very linear medium, and yet I like to try to find all kinds of ways to put marks into the plate that read as tone, which is both at times very frustrating, but then, as I say, there's some mistake you make, and it's a wonderful thing, and off you go with it. I've been wondering, and now winter's coming on, so I'm losing my opportunity, but how will I get out where I can find people where they won't notice me, but where I can sit and draw them and make my drawings? Because there's also something about relating to people as you draw them that's kind of interesting to me. So that's a third element here. But
you mean drawing from life?
Right.
Yeah, that's true. That's very interesting. There's a relationship that, which is an interesting reflection on what's happening now, right? We don't, there isn't life drawing classes, or you don't work with models. And that's a very different position for an artist. And I've never really thought about that before. I haven't talked about that before in these interviews, but yeah, the only kind of life models would be on Zoom, which I've seen some people do. I was in a Zoom meeting not long ago, and then a few people started passing around sketches of, you know, all those squares of people, right?
Right.
Kind of talking.
Right. No, I think there are classes on Zoom, and some people are doing it. I have not tried that. To me, it would be a little bit like working from a photograph, which I have never liked to do. So I may be wrong. I maybe ought to give it a shot before I dismiss it altogether. But I'm also somewhat hopeful that sometime within the year there will be a chance to sit in a cafe and sketch people again. Mm. I could have done it over the summer if I'd gotten myself going, because people are sitting outside and they are sitting in cafes, but I was too busy doing my paintings.
So let's talk about the paintings. What's happening in the paintings now? These are also landscapes, is that correct?
These are landscapes, and these are, I had reached a point where, as I said, I was trying to do one thing and it just was giving me fits. And so I allowed myself, as I do occasionally, to simply paint and see what I found. I don't do that too often, because very often I find myself in the middle of something I don't want to be in the middle of. But I did it on this occasion. And suddenly,
by that you mean painting without a drawing underneath, without a specific idea, just approaching the canvas and seeing where things go.
Exactly. What is it that I'm seeing here? And I began to do this, and suddenly I was in the middle of, I've done now, I think I've lost some of them, but I think I have at least 8 of these things, and they are small landscapes. And I understood they were countryside pictures, but I didn't think of any particular countryside, except about a month ago we were driving through the country trying to get from one place to another without going on major interstates, and I realized this is exactly the landscape I've been painting. And So these are gently rolling hills, clusters of trees, very strange buildings, usually little rectangular buildings, roads, and so forth. And I feel a little apologetic about them. They seem to be entirely about escape. And I've realized, well, I'm not going to apologize for that right now. I'm not very happy with the way things are. And if these paintings take me to a place that one of the things I'm liking best about them is that while they're clearly recognizable, there's also a very abstract, that there are spots of color and marks within them that are completely irrational. They're not, they don't describe anything, but they look perfectly well suited to the painting, and they do all make sense. So just let myself go with this, and at some point it'll stop and I'll go on to something else. But I do wonder, I mean, I do have this incredibly happy remembrance of driving into the countryside in Michigan, where I grew up, and at the time I didn't think they had militias. Maybe they did, but it seemed to be a much safer place and a much quieter place when I grew up. I don't know what these are exactly of, but they're a rural countryside.
And how large are these?
Oh, very small. They're it's big for me if I make it be 14 by 18. These are generally more like 9 inches by 10 inches or about that size, a little bit smaller, a little bit bigger. And I don't know if that's a function of the fact that I'm very nearsighted. It could well be.
And where will these, what will happen to these? Are there any shows planned, or how will they get out into the world?
Well, there are no shows planned right now. I've just had a show, and that was all of the work of the farm that I talked about, the Warfield Farm, and that came down back at the end of September, I think it was. And so I will amass a group of these, and at some point I will try to figure out where they might go into the world, and I'm not quite sure yet what that will be. I belonged to a gallery in town at one time, but it was a cooperative, and it was just a great deal of work. And so I haven't done that now for a while, but there are venues to find, and community galleries and galleries, university perhaps related galleries that I might try these at. I haven't quite gotten there yet. I'm still just working on the paintings.
Well, it sounds exciting. And you have presses obviously in your studio too, because both you and your husband are printmakers, correct?
Yes, he does woodcuts, and he has a press. It's a big thing. It's actually an etching press, but he has figured out how to use it to print woodcuts. And mine is a smaller etching press, and we sort of keep our own materials. We once talked about sharing a studio, but I immediately knew that might not be a good idea. So I do have a press, and it's just an Etan press, not a well-known brand, but it gives me what I need.
That's known. I know that brand. There's something beautiful about those. That's the press with like the giant wheel, right? It has a
yes.
Well,
yes.
I guess they all do. But yeah, giant like kind of spoked wheel. Well, that's exciting that you can continue to produce that work. And let me ask you one more question, which is the last one. What are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious what everyone's reading.
Well, I would like to tell you I've been reading some scholarly tome about art or aesthetics. And I thought about doing that in anticipation of this interview, but the reality is that I have been reading a lot of fiction. And I'm reading Marilynne Robinson's Gilead. I've read this before. It's been out for quite a long time, but I heard an interview by her recently. She's come out with a new book. And so I picked this up again. And reading it is like sitting in a very quiet room with someone who's speaking softly and saying something very important. And it seems to be something that feels like it heals the soul a bit. And beyond that, I've been reading the fiction of an author. I think she's very well known, but I have only recently discovered her. Her name is Paulette Giles, and she writes wonderful stories about Texas right after the Civil War. And they're amazingly plotted, and the characters are remarkable. They show up in each story has a different character in it, but the characters circulate through the stories. And then, believe it or not, for comfort, I have been reading Rick Atkinson's History of the Second World War, and somehow it's so calming and reassuring to know that once upon a time the country did something noble and did it well and didn't always do it right, but succeeded in overcoming something that seemed very threatening. And so I read that right now to remind myself it could happen.
Yes, it could. And
I have a quick question for you.
Sure.
I'm a little bit familiar with York. And I'm fascinated by the piece that you put into the Whitney Biennial, the I can't remember what it was called, but the gestures of washing feet. And I mean, that's been the whole gist of your life, hasn't it? Helping people. I hope I'm construing that right, or was that a...
Well, perhaps, you know, I don't know if I look back at it all that way, but that was, the new economy, we called that, my wife and I, and that was, project we did then. And I don't know if all of my life has been about helping people, but I think I'm the kind of person that that seems to kind of naturally encourage other people without
right.
trying to be a motivational person or something. And that's grown into, right. you know, a few different ways. But
well, that's pretty remarkable by itself.
I mean, the interviews in a way are part of, you know, because that work is really considered social practice, and other projects that I've done with my wife are interactive with artists in a way, although I resisted this idea. The interviews are social practice. I'm an artist, you know, interviewing other artists and curators, so the questions I ask or how I'm listening is a little bit different. And recently I did a lecture. Last year I gave a lecture at SVA. I was asked to give a lecture by the head of the MFA department on interview as social practice, he called it.
Huh.
And that made me think more about it, that you know, I don't know that that's about helping people, but it's about people, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
that's
also
which
about
I'm interested in.
Yeah, various ways people have that they are trying to communicate, and then they come together. I mean, you talking with all of us and bringing us together. It I found it a really helpful thing to listen to these interviews.
Glad. Thanks. Yeah, there's something odd, right, about talking to artists without images. You know, we talk about your paintings, your printmaking, and we're not looking at anything. I mean, there'll be images in this interview for people to see, and they can go to your website. But, there's something about this conversation with artists that I think everybody knows how to talk about art. At the same time, it's a very odd thing to talk about without images and at any length, really.
I think it can be very difficult to talk about art.
Yeah.
Because
it
for
can
all,
be,
many of us, it's so important, and it's so, I mean, we're making pictures. We're not sitting and writing and talking about it.
Right, and that's, you know, I mean, I always thought the most intimidating interviews was actually poets. I thought I can talk to artists. That I feel like I can do, talk about visual art, but poets seem, you know, how do you talk about that or take that apart and just discuss things around it? I've grown to learn more how to do that, but that seemed quite different than visual arts in terms of, right, the conversation. What is this about? You know?
Right. Right.
Well, Ellen, thank you for asking me those questions, and thank you for your time. Thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much. It's been a really delightful experience. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.